let's give a warm welcome to Vera from Ventura.
As we said, thank you. Okay, I'll wait until everybody can find their way in. Not to make you hurry or anything. I've been in program in March. It'll be 7 years. My mom is my qualifier. She is also my hero. My mom has been in March. She will be sober for 7 years. And it's like the most amazing thing I'd never... I never thought I'd live to the day to see that. I guess I'll just share my experience, strength, and hope, because that's the best way I know how to do it. My mom is an alcoholic, and she's done every drug on the whole planet, as far as I know. She started drinking when she was 12, so by the time I came around, she was an avid drinker. Her and my dad got married, and my dad is the most square, straight-laced person you will ever meet in your life. I've seen him drunk once in my entire life. I'm 18, by the way. yeah, I don't know how they worked out at all, but they didn't, because they got divorced when I was 4. So it's just been my mom and I since I was 4 years old. My dad stuck around, like, did the weekend thing, but really wasn't a big part of my life. I have two older sisters. One is 30 and one is 26. I was an accident. I was born 6 years after my mom's tubes were tied. Abstinence is the only answer. If they want to be here, they'll find a way. So I was born 6 years after my mom's tubes were tied, and my dad was the happiest person in the whole world because my dad married my mom with her tubes tied, so he never thought that he was going to have children of his own, but he was happy with my two older sisters. And my mom and dad got divorced, and at the age of 5, when custody was pending, I was given the decision of who I wanted to live with, which for a 5-year-old is kind of heavy. Just because you're still at that age where you're worried about hurting people's feelings. So of course that was my main incentive, was like, which one will be more hurt if I pick the other? And of course, being a little girl, I chose to live with my mom, and my mom figured that that would happen. My dad moved out and got remarried, like 2 years later, to another amazingly square, straight-laced woman that I hated. And my dad also asked me permission if he could marry her, and I said, no way. They've been married for like 9 years now. And my mom just went downhill from there. I remember the first time I could ever remember my mom drinking, like the first time it ever registered in my head that my mom, there was something wrong with my mom by the way she drank. It was at her ex-fiance's house, who lived down the block from us, and she was sitting in the living room, and she was, like, begging me to come over and give her a hug. And you know those kind of memories where, like, you remember them like it's a movie that you know by heart. Like, you remember exactly where you're standing. You remember exactly what they said. This is one of those memories. And I think I was probably, like, in the third grade. And my mom was begging me to come over and give her a hug. And she was sloppy and she was a mess and she was like grabbing at me. And it totally freaked me out because my mom's never like that. And I didn't know what to do. I was just so scared. She was like a new person to me. And that's the first time I ever remember my mom being drunk. And I don't really remember a lot from my mom's drinking days because I kind of just don't want to. So that's the way my body let me do it. I just don't remember most of it. But I do remember certain memories, like movie memories. And another one of those is the way I first learned how to walk to school, like things like that. My mom was too hungover in the morning to get out of bed, so I just found my way on my own. I was always a little kid, like sitting last on the lawn, waiting for mom to come pick me up from school, that sort of thing. But I never thought there was anything wrong with that because that's the way I grew up. I thought that was okay. Like, so what? You know, I'll hang out for an extra 2 hours. And when I was in the sixth grade, I was 12 years old, just turned 12. I remember the day that my mom decided to quit drinking. And that day, her and her drinking buddy, who got sober after she did, were at my house in Glendale. And they used to party it up in the kitchen like no tomorrow, just the two of them. It was a blast, and then I cleaned up in the kitchen in the morning, and it was horrible. And I was just in my mom's bedroom watching TV, and everything was fine. It was just another day, like, so what? Mom and Victoria are drinking. Like, not a big deal. And then my mom started to, like, scream at, like, bloody murder, and I had no idea what was going on, and I ran into the kitchen. And there were two empty handles of vodka and, like, you know those big gallon? Like, that gone, like, on the floor, like, empty bottles. My mom's favorite drink of choice was just straight vodka. And she was, like, screaming, and I didn't know what was going on, and I tried to ask her what was going on. And she grabbed Victoria's arm and showed me, and she had these, like, boils, like, blisters that were probably, like, 2 inches in width, and then they came, like, an inch off of her skin on her arm and on her upper thigh. And I had no idea what it was. My mom had no idea what it was, and either did she. And my mom, being the good, responsible drunk that she is, decided she was too drunk to drive her to the hospital, so she would call an ambulance. So my mom got on the phone with 911 and blacked out immediately. I grabbed the phone and told them my address and what was going on. And of course, when the 12-year-old daughter gives them the address to the house because her mom is too drunk to do it, they send a few cops. And I lived in like a pretty nice suburban kind of neighborhood in Glendale. And we had cops and fire trucks and ambulances, and the whole block was on their front lawn, and it was a party at my house. And there were a ton of, like, they took Victoria away as soon as they got her there, and they pulled my mom and her both into the middle of the street because they wouldn't let each other go. They were, like, grasped together. Like screaming, which automatically meant that I was an illegitimate child of a lesbian couple. Because that's the first thing that the cop asked me, if my mom was a lesbian. It's in the sixth grade. I was like, what? yeah, it was an interesting. They finally got her into the ambulance and took her away, and my mom was screaming bloody murder. She's on my front porch, and this is the thing to this day that still gets me in the heart. Regardless of where I was standing or what I was watching, I saw the whole thing, and two cops took my mom and pushed her onto her knees on the asphalt of my front porch and cuffed her right in front of me, like, didn't think anything of it, like it would affect me at all. And it still does to this day. And I can remember it just like a movie. And they cuffed my mom and arrested her for child endangerment because she was too drunk to take care of me. And so they put my mom in the police car, and then we had the whole good cop, bad cop scenario. And this cop came in, and I remember how proud I was in the sixth grade because I had won a poster drawing contest for DARE. And my mom... My mom was so proud. So the poster was hanging up in my living room. And with, like, my, like, cute little ribbon right next to it. And I was really proud of that poster, too, man. Come on, DARE's cool. And one of the cops walked in and just laughed, like, at my poster. And he was like, DARE, huh? That's pretty cool. I was like, WTF, man, what the fuck? Like, come on. And... I was really disappointed. Like, I was like, I don't understand why you're making fun of that. And they made me, because I didn't know any better, take them around the house and let them look at whatever they wanted to. So I gave them the grand tour of my house. My mom is currently a self-employed artist, but she's a jack of many, many trades. And at the time, she was a plumber. So she, if any of you are plumbers or know of plumbers, they carry map gas around with them, which automatically means there's a meth lab in the house. And she does crack, which isn't true at all. So it was, like, her tool set was sitting right there, and they saw that, and they just assumed that there were a lot more things that went along with it than there were. So they tore apart my house, and my mom's also a photographer, and she had a dark room in our garage, and they made me take them through the garage, too, which just made the meth lab theory more solid, because if you've ever seen a dark room, there's tons and tons and tons of chemicals that go in a dark room. And they're just sitting in bottles in my garage. Like, it doesn't look very, very good. I will admit that. So after the mean cop reams me, I'm a 12-year-old. I have no idea what's going on about all the chemicals in my house. I didn't even know what a meth lab was at the time. And he's asking me if my mom does meth. I was like, what's meth? Finally, the good cop steps in and takes me into my living room and goes, is there anybody you can call to come pick you up, to take you for the night? The first thing that comes into my head is, Dad can't find out. The cops are at my house. Dad can't find out? What? So I call my best friend that lives up the street, and her mom comes and gets me from my house. And she takes me to her house and tells me, I can't let you stay here. Like, you have to call your dad. And I was like, you just ruined my whole plan. I called you so my dad wouldn't find out. And, you know, I can just stay here for a couple days. It'll be fine. But no, she made me call my dad. And my mom always refers to my dad as the Disneyland dad, because he's one of those, just pick the kid up for the weekend, take him to Disneyland, like... that sort of thing. I've never really had a relationship with my dad much. So he picks me up and doesn't even ask me if I'm okay. Puts me in the car, and he lived in Altadena at the time, so it's a good, like, like 15-minute drive, just reamed on my mom the whole time about how she's always been such a horrible alcoholic and she's a horrible mother and she always said that she'd quit drinking and she never did and how she never treats me right and how she never does anything for me right and just, it was horrible. And like, that car ride was like the worst car ride I've ever had in my life, and it happened when I was 12. And we got to his house and we went inside and he went to bed and I sat up in the living room all night, like not even knowing what just happened. I couldn't sleep. My dad made me go to school the next day. The cops came to my school to ask me questions, to talk to me about my mom, which is like, when you're in elementary school, kids are like, oh, like making up all like sorts of stories, you know? Nor did I want to, you know, tell any of them what actually happened, because until then I thought it was an okay thing. And they took my mom to jail, and she spent the night in jail for like a day, but they wouldn't let me go back to her house for like a few days. So I stayed with my dad, and he gave me absolutely no sympathy whatsoever, nor did his wife. Finally, I went back to my mom's house, and like her face was like the best thing to see. Like, I missed her so much, and to see that she was okay was the best thing in the world. And they let her off without the child endangerment charge, but they did give her a court card to AA. And that is, like, the miracle of all miracles. Whether she found it up by herself or whether the court gave it to her, I don't care. She found it. And that day that I came home, she went to her first AA meeting. And she hasn't taken a sip of alcohol since that day that she got arrested. And I'm so grateful for her finding program. It's the best thing that's ever happened to her. And a couple months into her sobriety, she decided that I should need some help too, because she didn't want to do it by herself, so why not make me do it too? So she was like, there's this thing called Alateen. You're going to try it. Not do you want to try it. You're going to try it. Okay. And she took me to my first Alateen meeting. And by the time we hit the parking lot, I was in tears. I was like petrified. I was like hyperventilating and crying. And we ran into the sponsor of the meeting in the parking lot. And I don't know how she assumed I was in that, going to the Alateen meeting or anything, but she did. So she walked me into the Alateen meeting, and I was petrified. And I was, hi, Julie. That's my sponsor. And I walked into that meeting, and I looked around and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the weirdest group of kids I've ever seen in my life. And I just stood there for a second and I was like petrified and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to sit. I didn't know what to say, if I should say hi or just be quiet. And everybody looked so old because everybody was like 18 and I was like 12. And then this boy who had like this curly, like, greasy looking hair with a big leather jacket and like black torn up jeans with lots of chains came over and I was like shaking. And he came up and he gave me a hug. And I just broke down. I was crying so hard. I didn't know what to do. And that was my first Alateen meeting. And that boy came over and gave me a hug and it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Just not knowing them at all and having them come up and give me a hug and, like, telling me that they love me and that I'm in the right place was phenomenal. And ever since then, I just kept coming back because I love that feeling so much of being loved by people who didn't even care, like, how bizarre my parent was or what I've been through or what I've seen. And that, it was just so great. And as I stayed there in that meeting for almost a year, and I really, like, established my feelings there and my friends, and I was so happy. And it was just, I was doing really well, and then my mom decided she wanted to move. And I was okay with that because she needed to move away from the people that she knows, because that's all she did was party, and everyone she knows parties, and being sober in that kind of environment is just not healthy. So I was okay with it. I was not okay with the location that she picked. Do any of you know where the Antelope Valley is? Yeah. I lived in Glendale my whole life. I've gone to school with the same kids since I was in kindergarten. And she wants to move to Palmdale? It's like, I was like, what? What is Palmdale? Where is Palmdale? Don't let the name deceive you. There are no palm trees in Palmdale. Horrible place. And it's not even like I lived in, like, the city where I could, like, walk to the store. No, I lived in the Bokeh Canyon, which is nothing. It's a canyon, just like it says it is. My next door neighbor was a reservoir in a Scientology camp. I turned 13, and I started 7th grade in the glorious Antelope Valley, and I hated it. I had to ride the school bus to school. I had to be at the school bus stop at 6:30 in the morning, which was great when you're 13 years old. And just after being so happy where I was, it was just not healthy for me to move away, even if it was the best thing that my mom could do. And I let myself fall way downhill because I couldn't find a new meeting in the Antelope Valley because it's not a city. So I went for, like, almost a year without a meeting after being used to going to a meeting every week, if not more than one meeting a week, for an entire year. And just things were so bad. I got, like, horribly depressed. Depression, oh, thanks. Depression runs in my family, and it's easily contagious. So my mom moving away and detoxing and me being depressed and us living in the middle of nowhere didn't help. And just things got so horrible. My mom was so, so crazy. Like, she was okay when she was drunk. Like, she was happy and, like, sappy, and she was crazy sober. Crazy. I was like, I don't know if I like this. And living in the wilderness and her being psychotic. I didn't know about this. And so I did that, like, went through that kid phase of let's wear all black and be really depressed and not talk to anyone. I didn't have any friends. I hated everyone at my school in the 7th grade. And just things got horrible. And I didn't have anyone to talk to anymore. Like, I tried to stay in touch with my friends and call people on the phone, and it just didn't feel the same. And I made friends with some bad kids. And just they weren't good influences at all, and just fed my depression more. And I got to the phase of where I needed to let myself know that I was still alive. And I did go through a masochistic phase, which I don't talk about at all. It's not something I'm proud of at all. But it got really bad. And I have written out suicide notes a couple times. And I just until I got to program, I kind of pushed it off as just being a little kid and just overdoing it. And now I really realize that I was going through a lot, and it was a big deal. And that continued for almost a year. And then by the grace of God, I found this meeting in Santa Clarita, and it was two kids, but I didn't care because it was a meeting. So I went to that for a little while, and then got really bummed out on it because the kids were 6 and 9. I don't know if the suffix teen has anything to do with anything, but maybe a little bit. So I got burnt out on that pretty fast, but I did stay long enough to get the memo of the Roundup in Palmdale, which is, if any of you have been to the Roundup in Palmdale, Lancaster, is awesome. The AA or the Al-Anon is so great. You should check it out. And I found that, and I was awesome, there's an Alateen. Alateen is part of the Roundup, and they have their own room, and it's marathon meetings, and I was like, this is just what I need. This is what I stayed here to find. And I went to that Roundup, and lo and behold, there's a meeting in Palmdale. It's a miracle. And the kids were my age, and they had been in program for a good amount of time. They had something to offer to me. And I was just so, so, so lucky that I found that. And I continued to go to that meeting, and it was great, and it was awesome. And my mom was doing well. She was going to her meeting. She was still sober. She was getting less crazy a little bit. My mom's an awesome dry alcoholic. I'm sorry, I'm picking at your podium. And of course, never fails. As soon as you get comfortable with something, something comes along to mess it up. I was in the eighth grade at this time, and I had this best friend that I hung out with all of the time, and we had horses, and we rode horses together, and her mom was the ranch manager at the ranch that I boarded my horses at, so we were together all the time. And I was 13, and I'm sure if any of you have kids, you know us Alateens grow up pretty fast. So I was definitely an old 13. And then my best friend told me one day that her brother was coming home from juvie. I was like, I didn't know you had a brother. That's cool. That's cool. And then he came home, and I was like, man, he's kind of cute. I kind of like him. He just got out of juvie. And so I thought it would be a good idea to kind of date this boy. I was 13, he was 17. And we hung out a lot. And he was kind of the first person who's ever, like, showed me attention, like, guy-wise. Because when I was little, I was kind of the awkward kid. Like, I was fat when I was little, and then I kind of grew up a little bit and, like, thinned out a little bit, but I still looked like a little boy. So it felt really good to have attention from a male figure because I didn't get any from my dad. And then apparently I let my guard down a little too much and I let him get too close to me, and then he kind of took away something from me that I didn't want him to without permission. And everything that had been so good for so long went down the drain. He took my virginity from me when I was 13 years old. I had just turned 13. And he was a big guy. He was kind of strong looking, and he knew what he was doing, and he convinced me into saying yes so he couldn't get in trouble for it. And I was 13 and I was little and I was scared and I just didn't, like, he just kept, like, forcing me to say yes, so I said yes. And after that I tried to hide it and I didn't tell anyone. And then my mom found out, and she thought, she didn't know the situation, so she got so angry at me, and, like, she wanted to get out of me what I couldn't tell her. And this is the first time my mom has ever hit me across the face, and the only time my mom has ever hit me across the face. And she went to slap me in the face, but she stepped too far, and she palmed me in my eye, so it gave me a black eye. And not even that she hit me that hard, just the placement of her hand. And as soon as she found out what the real story was, she was like, we have to go to the police. So we attempted to go to the Palmdale police. I showed up there with my mom and a black eye, telling the story of how somebody forced me to say yes. And they weren't buying it at all, and they were like, well, there's nothing we can do about it, I'm sorry. So nothing was done. I don't know where he is now. I don't know what ever happened to him. But after that, things just went downhill. Like, I thought that if they can't do anything, like, what's the point of trying to be good at all? Like, what's the point of trying to be happy if no one's going to be able to, like, support you or protect you? Or everything that I had depended on, like, just went down the drain. And I got back into that masochistic phase and wore all black for, like, forever. And in the Palmdale heat, it's not a good idea. I had, like, this really long brown hair that, like, came down to, like, here, and I parted in the middle and, like, wore my hood all the time, and my mom always tried to get me to take my sweater off. I was like, are you crazy? She's like, you're gonna die of heat stroke. And I never took off my sweater. And then I tried to, like, work up this relationship with my dad, and I'd go to his house every other weekend and with his horrible wife and my little sister, who is my stepmom's child. And this meeting ends at what time? 9? 8:30? Oh, wow. I'm sorry. A 9? I don't know. And my stepmom always had cute, snood remarks about, like, why don't you put some color on? We aren't going to funeral, Vera. Like, stuff like that. Just, like, shut up, man. Come on. And my dad had no idea. He still doesn't to this day. I never told him. I never want him to know. And just, it was a horrible experience for me. And I started going to counseling. And this boy and my best friend were a part of my home meeting. So I know, there's no way I'm setting foot back in that place ever again. So I tried this counseling stuff, and it wasn't great, and I didn't like it at all. And I finally, it just one day it hit me, and I was like, I have to go back. I have to find my program again because I can't do this by myself. And I went back, and just being back with those people that I grew up with that have known everything about me since I was 13 was so loving and so great. And the program has really taught me how to love myself and love my mom for who she is and deal with what she's going through and deal with my dad and his unableness to communicate and tell me that he loves me when I really know that he does and that he cares about me and my feelings too. And able to deal with his wife who doesn't care about me at all. And just, I could never be more grateful for something in my life to live to the day to see that my mom would be able to function by herself without a drink, without drugs. She's been my hero my whole life. I grew up with just her and me. My sisters were out of the house when I was really little. They're way older than I am. And just being through this journey with my mom and program, and I would never have the relationship that I have with my mom now if it wasn't for program and the way she learned to appreciate me and take care of me. It would have never happened. And it's just really taught me to love myself like I've never been able to love myself and to open up to people like I've never been able to open up to people before. I've never, ever had the courage to share my story with anyone that I've been in a relationship with. And I did that for the first time tonight, and it feels really, really good to be able to do that and to be able to trust someone like that. And I have no one else to thank but you guys and program and the way you guys work your program and the way you pass it on to one another and just the way it means in other people's lives. And thank you so much for asking me to share tonight. It really means a lot to me, and thank you for...